Gas prices are falling.
And a Spanish bank may need a bailout.
From APM, American Public Media, I'm Jeremy Hobson in Los Angeles.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in New York. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org for Tuesday, May 8th.
Coming up, Lake Tahoe vies for a spot in the 2022 Winter Games.
And Dunkin' Donuts goes to India.
Also, a conversation with Chicago chef Charlie Trotter. It's all coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Gas prices have dropped for the fifth straight week to an average of about $3.79 a gallon nationwide. For an explanation, let's turn to Julie Niemann, analyst with Smith, Moore & Company. She's with us, as always, from St. Louis. Good morning.
Morning, Jeremy.
So I guess it's good news that prices are falling, but why are they falling?
Well, a couple things. First of all, Europe's back in recession. We've had very weak growth, very high unemployment worldwide. And the biggest problem is we really have high inventory as well. We have more than we need. We have refinery problems, pipeline problems, all being worked out. So we have new supplies still coming in. We have plenty of inventory.
So things are getting worse in some places like Europe, as you say. Does that mean that these gas prices that are falling are really not so great news?
It is implying that we have a very weak economy, but my argument is we really never have been out of recession. There just is simply no growth coming in out of there. And so when you've got a situation where you have high gasoline prices, people are still cutting back. High prices hurt the families. And my husband, high school teacher, says kids are still carpooling, and that's a shocker.
Do you expect prices are going to go up, though, as we get into the summer driving season, as they usually do?
Here's the pattern. June of 2010, it was $70 a barrel. We went up to 115 in 2011, then down to 77 in October, up to 110 this year. We're going back down, and I think we're probably going to see it in the 70s again.
What's it like in St. Louis right now, gas price-wise?
It's coming down. Everybody's walking around grinning, but it still hurts at $3.45 a barrel.
Julie Niemann, analyst with Smith, Moore & Company. Thanks as always.
You bet.
Meanwhile, the situation in Europe seems to keep getting worse. Newly elected French President François Hollande says austerity measures in Europe need to be renegotiated. Hollande campaigned against austerity, advocating more social spending. But German Chancellor Angela Merkel said renegotiation would not happen. And in Spain, the government there is preparing a bailout for one of the country's biggest banks, Bankia. The BBC's Tom Burridge reports.
It's the banking group in Spain with the largest amount of real estate on its books. Analysts reckon its total assets are worth some $390 billion. That's equivalent to nearly a third of the Spanish economy. The problem is that Spain's construction boom crashed in 2008, and now the bank holds billions of dollars of bad property assets. The new Spanish government has said time and again that it would not put public money into the banks. It now looks set to pump in the region of $9.1 billion into Bankia. It's an idea that some in Spain don't like.
It doesn't seem right to me because the banks should be responsible for themselves. If a small business does badly, then the government isn't going to rescue them.
Shares in Bankia dropped sharply this morning. This comes at a time when Spain's government is desperately trying to balance its own books. But the Spanish Prime Minister said he is willing to bail out Spanish banks if it was in the interest of the Spanish economy. From Madrid, I'm the BBC's Tom Burridge for Marketplace.
Today, the Senate will take up a bill to keep student loan interest rates from going up from 3.4% to 6.8% in July. But scary numbers aside, what would the hike in interest rates really cost students and their families? Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale did the math.
President Obama has been touring college campuses from North Carolina to Iowa, stumping for another year of cheaper interest charges on some student loans.
And for each year that Congress doesn't act, the average student with these loans will rack up an additional $1,000 in debt.
Republicans and Democrats agree the lower interest rate should be extended and are only arguing over how to pay for it. But Jason Delisle at the New America Foundation says the interest rate cut won't really be that much of a break. Only a third of student borrowers qualify for the cheaper rates, plus the loans are capped at $5,500 a year.
If you can't borrow a lot of money, the interest rate starts to not become that much of an issue. You're not talking about a lot of money in terms of what does this do to a borrower's sort of average monthly payment. It's about $9 a month.
DeLisle says the president and Congress are only considering a one-year extension of the favorable interest rate, with no mention of the fact that the entire graduate student loan program comes up for refunding next year. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Well, as John just said, both sides, the Republicans and the Democrats, agree that student loan interest rates should stay low. The question is how they pay for it. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports now on the Republican plan.
The GOP has been trying to grab money from the Affordable Care Act to fund politically popular items like low-cost student loans. Last month, the House passed its version, taking $12 billion from the Prevention and Public Health Fund. It's supposed to pay for things like bike lanes and nutrition programs to fight obesity and anti-smoking campaigns. Here's how Illinois Congresswoman Judy Biggert characterized the money.
Nothing more than an open-ended fund that has no clear oversight or purpose.
Not so, says Matthew Marsom of the Public Health Institute.
Never before has there been this type of investment to make sure that the communities that don't have the type of funding that's necessary can prevent the burden of disease that's costing business and it's costing all of us through chronic disease.
Marsom's group helps administer the health prevention program in more than 40 rural counties in California and has been lobbying to keep the money flowing. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
London's Summer Olympics are just around the corner. To gear up for that onslaught of visitors, businesses there are conducting a stress test today. Lots of people will be working from home, avoiding public transit. Here in the U.S., some businesses are already focused on the 2022 Winter Games. Lake Tahoe is going for the gold, as Marketplace's Jeff Tyler explains.
The Squaw Valley Ski Resort has ambitious plans for the future rooted firmly in its past. To see what I mean, let's take the aerial tram.
550 feet up off the ground, kind of like standing in the very top of the Washington Monument, peeking out over the edge.
Up to the Olympic Museum. An old newsreel replays highlights from the 1960 Winter Games, which were held here at Squaw Valley.
18,000 spectators from all over the world wonder if they're glad they came. It is cold, it is dark. Still, the 8th Olympic Winter Games are about to begin.
Andy Wirth, CEO of Squaw, would like to see history repeat itself. He's coordinating the campaign to bid for the Olympics in 2022. Wirth says hosting the Games would unleash millions of federal dollars to improve infrastructure.
Substantially improving the roads, the bridges, and the transportation infrastructure in this area, all benefiting the local economy, the regional economy, the state economy, and also the environment.
He says the environment benefits because reducing congestion means reducing pollution. But some locals don't see the value. Jamie Scheckman heads Mountain Riders Alliance, which advocates for sustainability in the ski industry.
There's a lot of us that would prefer not to see the 2022 Olympics here. You know, having commercial airlines flying into Truckee, having four-lane highways for a two-week global competition. Yes, there will be stimulus, but it forever changes the landscape.
The leadership at Vail is half committed to the Olympic bid. Blaise Carrig is co-president of Vail, which owns three ski resorts in the Tahoe area.
At the same time, our company has resorts in Colorado, and there's an interest to see the games in Colorado as well.
But the ski industry didn't have much luck the last time it tried to bring the Winter Olympics to Colorado. In 1976, Colorado voters, worried about the impact on the environment, gave the Olympics a thumbs down. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
So, Jeremy, are you a clean person or a messy person? I don't know this about you.
I'm pretty clean. I'm pretty clean.
Yeah? Yeah. Are you a vacuumer?
Only when I must.
Well, I have a new product for you.
Okay.
There's a vacuum, a little automatic vacuum that goes around and vacuums up for you, and it talks.
Huh.
Yeah. The Sharp Corporation in Japan has just released this little self-propelled vacuum cleaner. It's called the Coco Robo.
Okay.
It's the size of a dinner plate. It cleans automatically, and it's trilingual.
Wow.
It speaks English, Japanese, and Chinese, and says little funny phrases, apparently.
English, Japanese, and Chinese. That's an interesting combination.
Well, I think those are their markets, but, you know, it knows more languages than I do. And it's probably a lot cleaner than I am. Anyway, it goes on sale next month. It's about $1,600.
Wow.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
Dunkin' Donuts is now open for business in India. The company is celebrating the grand opening of its flagship store in New Delhi today, but just don't call it a donut shop. Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
Here in the U.S. lately, ads for Dunkin' Donuts have been almost all about the coffee.
Hey, what are you drinking?
Definitely Dunkin'.
I run on Dunkin'.
America runs on Dunkin' coffee.
In India, though, the coffee shop business is already booming and will get even more crowded when Starbucks moves in this summer. So Dunkin' Brand's Karen Raskoff says the company and its local partner will cast Dunkin' as an all-day eatery that sells more than coffee.
Items for everyday part, including donuts, sandwiches, milkshakes, smoothies, snacks, and more.
In New York, freelance Indian journalist Asim Chabra says Dunkin' would be wise to follow the lead of other American fast food chains.
They had to sort of tailor-make the food items specifically for Indian tastes. You know, a Western taste, but with Indian spicing.
Much like McDonald's changed its Big Mac into a mutton and chicken Maharaja Mac, Dunkin' will cater to local tastes with special mango donuts. Chabra says donuts aren't new to India, but Dunkin' could raise the bar.
For a country of India's size, they haven't figured out how to make the perfect donut.
I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Well, a new survey by Harris Interactive on behalf of Choice Hotels International finds that Americans are planning to take more vacation trips this summer compared to last. We're joined now for our Midday Extra by Alexandra Jarrett. She's Senior Vice President of Brand Strategy and Marketing at Choice Hotels International. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So I guess your survey says 87% of Americans plan to take more or about the same number of trips this summer compared to last year.
Yes, that's right. 9 out of 10 Americans.
And why is that, do you think?
Well, you know what? A couple of things. One, we're seeing unemployment going down. Consumer confidence is going up. We're seeing gas prices stabilizing. And I think overall, Americans are just feeling better about the economy. And as our CEO likes to say, Americans feel that they have a God-given right to travel. And so they're going out and traveling this summer.
But they are focused on spending less or getting more value, I guess. Is that right?
That is absolutely right. What we found is that 9 out of 10 Americans are really looking for more value this summer than they did last summer, and they're really looking for ways that they can stretch their dollar. And so when we did the survey, we actually found that there were 3 key amenities that Americans are looking for that really help provide that value feeling. And one of them was free breakfast, free internet, free parking. And those amenities alone can save a family of 4 up to $50 a day, which they can use for other things.
Now, you guys have hotels all over the country. Where are you seeing or where are you expecting to see very popular places this summer that may be part of this new phenomenon of looking for value? Are people looking to go to places that are close to the major cities so that they don't have to travel too far? What are you expecting?
Yeah, we're really expecting Americans to travel all over, actually. We're seeing them going to the beaches. We're going to some of the major attractions. But we're also seeing them be really smart around, you know, where they're staying. And so they're looking for not necessarily being right next to high-end destinations, but being maybe a block away or a town over where they can find better rates. But there's really not any one specific area we're seeing them go to more or less. But what the survey actually says is that they're going to be traveling roughly 1,000 miles or so, and that they're going to be taking probably 2 separate vacations this summer. And primarily one of them will be by car. 84% of Americans are saying they'll be traveling by car.
2 separate trips. And what have we been seeing in previous years?
Years we've been seeing probably more around 1 trip, or we've seen actually more people have stay vacations, or they're staying for shorter amounts of time. So rather than what we're seeing now, they're going to be spending on average 5 nights on a vacation. A couple of years, you know, a year ago it was probably 3 nights. And we've also seen that in the past, a lot of Americans were, you know, staying with friends or family more so than at hotels. And this summer they're actually saying, you know what, I feel a little bit better about the economy, so I'm going to be staying more at a hotel than with Aunt Sally.
Well, Alexander, finally, let me ask you. I mean, when you were growing up, did you head out on the road, stay at hotels around the country? Did you do road trips?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I actually grew up in the hotel business. My father managed hotels all over the world, actually. So I love the business. And my last summer trip was actually with my two dogs, Duke and Daisy. We traveled across the country, so I was able to stay at some great pet-friendly hotels. Mm. Choice actually has over 2,500 pet-friendly hotels in the U.S., which is great because, you know, a lot of Americans love to travel with their pets.
A good salesperson right to the end, Alexandra Jarrett, Senior Vice President of Brand Strategy and Marketing at Choice Hotels International. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for your time.
Last night, many of the world's great chefs gathered in New York City for an award ceremony that's considered the Oscars of the food world. It's also known as the James Beard Foundation Awards. The Humanitarian of the Year prize went to Chicago chef Charlie Trotter, whose foundation helps poor kids attend culinary school. It was a particularly bittersweet award, though, because after 25 years, Trotter is closing his famous Chicago restaurant this summer. We are joined now by the man himself, Charlie Trotter. Good morning.
Good morning. Delighted to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you here, but tell us why you're quitting. Why are you hanging up the chef's
outfit?
Hold on
there, Sailor. I'm not quitting anything. I'm actually closing the restaurant after 25 years, and 5 years of learning the craft and the business, and then now, come August, 25 years of running it, I thought it's time to return to academia. Nothing more than that.
But, I mean, you're one of the greatest chefs in the world. Isn't this your calling?
Well, I've got a lot of callings. You can't just limit it to one. 5 years ago, I almost did this. I almost said, at 20 years, maybe I should do something that I've always wanted to do, which is return to the great books and continue to study philosophy and political theory and things that I love. So can't really do that and run a business at the same time. It really boils down to that.
Now, let me ask you about some of the things that I've read about your decision to close the restaurant. One, that it only got 2 Michelin stars in the recent guide. 2, that you've had business down 15% or 20%, according to you in the New York Times. And that maybe with a 25-year-old restaurant, you're no longer the fresh, hot thing in Chicago. Is any of that true?
Well, I don't know that. Who knows if it's true or not? It has nothing to do with it. I've been to every Michelin 3-star restaurant in the world, and some of them many times. I know we've accrued many accolades and other distinctions that we're proud of. But no, this is something I've been thinking of, as I just said, maybe you didn't remember, but 5 years ago I was going to actually do this. I mean, life's too short to just devote yourself to a single thing. And luckily for me, I'm interested in other things, and one must pursue those things.
Well, let me ask you about the business a little bit. When I was growing up in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, I remember my parents going up to your restaurant for a wedding anniversary.
I remember those. They were never on good behavior, to be honest with you. They were rowdy and maybe a little bit too much to drink, so that sort of thing.
Well, it was a very exciting meal for them. I mean, as I'm sure happens a lot with you, when people go to your restaurant, it's got to be one of the highlights of their year, at least food-wise. How much pressure does that put on you as a chef?
No pressure at all. Really, what you do as any sort of artisan or worker of any sort, you figure out a way to exceed expectations. Fine dining is the one luxury experience that's pretty much available to everyone. Not every day or once a week, but maybe once a year, because it only costs something like $100 an hour for the experience. And it takes 80 people to do it, whereas even the lamest plumber charges $115 an hour, and he's by himself. So fine dining is a luxury experience that is available and accessible to everybody.
Charlie Trotter, chef and owner at Charlie Trotter's in Chicago, which will shut its doors after 25 years this summer. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you so much.
And finally, to Nevada, Stacy, which has just approved the nation's first autonomous vehicle license. It's for one of those self-driving Google cars that use video cameras and sensors to navigate. So there will be a self-driving car driving around the streets of Las Vegas. I don't know if it's going to be able to get through the traffic on the strip any faster than the normal cars, but we shall see. However, Nevada is currently the only state that allows autonomous cars on its roads. So for now, what happens in Vegas will indeed stay in Vegas.
I don't know. I mean, don't you feel like driving on the strip is treacherous enough without cars that have no drivers in them coming
really
at you?
Yeah, really. Absolutely. I mean, it's probably going to be one of the biggest gambles in Vegas to walk around with that car, you know. I don't know where it's going to be going, but
That's true. Rolling the dice. Just
rolling
crossing the
dice.
Street, right?
Coming up with the cliches. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.